Welcome back to the show. Todd Zwillick filling in for John Hockenberry this morning. Well, in a few weeks' time, a new president will be sworn in Egypt, and it will be daunting. As well as the economy and an array of human rights issues, many Egyptians are demanding the new president reform Egypt's secret police and open up the thousands of secret police files gathered under the 30-year presidency of Hosni Mubarak. Now, these files are still under the control of the military after the secret police buildings were stormed by protesters a year ago. But some have been sneaked out by activists. And this is a remarkable story. Helena Merriman is a reporter who's been working in the Middle East for our partner, the BBC, and she's been speaking to those involved. Hello, Helena.
Good morning, Todd.
What can you tell us about what's in these files? Who is covered? What's the substance?
Well, these are the hundreds of thousands of secret police files that were gathered during Mubarak's time in power. And in Egypt's state security police, you can sort of see them as the equivalent of the Stasi, the secret police that were working in former East Germany. And the files that we gathered so far, what come out is they run the full gamut from quite mundane details, biographical details about people's lives. For example, one activist found files with biographical details about his grandfather, who at one stage was the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood. Other files are much more about rumor and gossip. So neighbors might have been informing on other neighbors, saying they were likely to want to bring down the regime. And then they moved to more serious allegations, some suggesting that people were leading battalions or groups. And then others are sort of pure surveillance. So one activist I spoke to, who was dubbed Facebook Girl, her name's Isra Abdul Fattah, she found tens of pages of documents about her. And these were wiretaps on her phone and also on Skype, which she was quite surprised about. She didn't realize that her Skype could be tapped in that way. And then others are more factual files detailing security contracts with companies around the world. So it's just a full spectrum of files that have been discovered so far.
Well, here's yet another activist who discovered some files as well. This is a gentleman named Hossam. He's an activist in his early 30s. And in March of last year, a few weeks after Mubarak stepped down, he broke into several buildings that were known to house these very files that you're talking about, Helena. He found thousands. Many had already been destroyed, but he snuck out a couple of DVDs containing photos of secret police officers. And he was ecstatic. Listen.
It definitely gave you this amazing sense of empowerment. I mean, you've taken down state security police. I'm like Superman. I can fly, you know, I mean, in the sky. I can jump from building. Like, it was beautiful.
Ecstasy on the part of Hossam there. Mm. A lot of pleasure, gaining a little bit of power over those who had power over him, it seems, for so many years.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of these people had personal experience with state security before. Hossam himself told me that he'd been taken in by state security, detained, and he describes being stripped naked, beaten, tortured. So he had a very personal reason for going into the compound. And he left with these two DVDs that he says contained photographs of state security police officers. And he has now been uploading them to a site he created called Piggypedia. In which these photos of secret police, he uploads them to the site, and the basic gist of it is, it's not just them monitoring us, we're now monitoring them.
Piggypedia, of course, is a disparaging term for police or secret police, but particularly insulting in a Muslim country.
Exactly. And, I mean, he sort of takes that role quite seriously, and he has now started calling, in addition to the files that he's been putting up there, he's calling for other activists to do the same, which is obviously very controversial because that could start leading to retribution, people taking justice into their own hands. But the key issue here is that a lot of people cannot imagine a time when these secret files will ever be released. So activists are increasingly feeling the only way forward is these slightly more controversial ways of putting the files online because they don't think this will ever be done for them.
Now, Helena Merriman, you mentioned retribution. We should point out that you did approach the Interior Ministry and the ruling military council to get an official view on what they had to say about this. We have some tape of that from Fahud Alam, the former deputy head of the secret police. And get this, he's also calling for the release of the secret files. Now, listen.
This is all part of Egyptian history. And it is important for the Egyptian people to learn about their history, to avoid making mistakes in the future.
From your conversations with people in the Interior Ministry and in the ruling military council, do
Do you think it's likely that these secret files will ever be released?
I don't think they're thinking of releasing these files ever. It's because of the culture in the Interior Ministry. We just don't have a culture of opening up to others.
And yet, Helena Merriman, it has happened. So are people in a position like Fahud Alam there worried about the kind of retribution you mentioned?
Actually, quite interestingly, he isn't. He says, I mean, when I went to see him, there was quite a lot of security outside of his house. And I said, wow, is this being stepped up because you're worried about this type of thing? And he said, no, you know, I've heard about these threats on Facebook and Twitter, but I don't take them seriously. So he says he's not too worried.
Now, what about the issue, though, of retribution against neighbors? Part of the way secret police operations like this, like in East Germany, the Stasi that you mentioned, part of the way they operate is not spying on people, but getting neighbors to spy on one another. It's a heck of a lot easier, and they talk to you on the corner and at the market. There must be concern among regular old Egyptians that neighbor will turn upon neighbor if they look at what's in some of these files.
That's actually not something that's come up so far. I mean, I think what they're mostly, the frustration is much more directed to the authorities. And interestingly, you bring up the point of the Stasi. The former head of the Stasi archives actually came to Egypt to give his advice to some of the activists. He met with them and he talked to them about his experiences of working with the files in former East Germany. And his advice was keep everything you can. You will never know what you might need at a later stage to try and understand how the secret police operated. And that's what happened in the former East Germany, where the files were opened up in 1992. But he didn't get very far with the Egyptian authorities when he came to Egypt. And in fact, he told me that the only time the authorities really were interested in what he had to say was when they wanted to find out from him how you could destroy files without them being put together. Because, of course, he told them about their experiences of piecing together shredded paper. And that was the only time they were interested. So people are very, very pessimistic about the idea that any more of these files will ever be released, apart from these ones that have been sneaked out that give us a glimpse into this very, very murky world.
And onto the disparagingly named website Pigipedia, which people may want to check out in order to get a visual sense of what we're talking about now, with Helena Merriman, Middle East correspondent for the BBC, talking about Egypt and secret files released from the secret police in Egypt. Helena, thank you.
Thanks very much.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.